It's Basketball Camp with Rick Camp.
Welcome into another edition of Basketball Camp. I'm Rick Camp, here with you as always. We got a six-game slate to go over, so I don't want to waste much time. A reminder, follow me on Twitter at Rick C. Camp, basketballcamppod at gmail.com to become part of the show. Subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Those help me and the podcast out greatly. And check out our sponsors, Dr. Squatch and Manscaped. All right, so let's get to the first game of the day. Toronto 107, Miami 103. It was really the Fred VanVleet show. A career-high 36 points, 5 boards, 4 assists. He was 7 of 12 from deep and 13 of 13 from the line. And with Kyle Lowry struggling, only 2 of 8 from the field, 14 points. VanVleet was there every moment that the Raptors absolutely needed a bucket, because this was more of a defensive game. Sure, there were missed shots from both teams, but on the whole, it was pretty solid defense played. Pascal Siakam had 22, and he was 4-7 from deep, so he bounced back a little bit. Toronto just shot the ball from three really well. They were 50% on threes, but they did turn the ball over a lot, which slowed some of their offense. 21 turnovers, so they were minus 7 overall. And Marc Gasol got in foul trouble pretty early from covering Bam Adebayo. But Serge Ibaka came in, and it's one of the great things that Toronto has is a good amount of depth, and especially proven depth. Serge Ibaka was awesome on Bam. So being able to just have a guy that can slow down one of the best up-and-coming bigs in the league the way Serge Ibaka did is why, even though Toronto doesn't have that dude at the end of games, they're still a team that has at least a small chance to maybe come out of the East. Now, on the Miami side, they just didn't shoot the ball well. He was only okay, but Goran Dragic was the guy that really motored their offense. Coming off the bench, he had 25, 5, and 5. Bam Adebayo, I mentioned Serge did a good job on him. He was pretty quiet. 10 points, 5 and 9 from the field. He did have 8 rebounds, though. And the thing that struck me about what Miami did, their shot distribution was really odd. Dragic was hot, so him leading the team in shots with 14 made sense. But Jay Crowder also had 14. Then Kelly Olynyk had 13. Tyler Hero with 11. And then you get to Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo that had 9 shots. Now that's a little bit on their offense, but it's also on the Toronto defense forcing the ball where they wanted it to go. And that turned this game, you know, into more of a defensive slog, to where Toronto shot the ball from three pretty well, but it wasn't a great game offensively overall, but they were still able to pull out this win. I do give Miami credit for the fact that this game was almost out of hand at the beginning of the third quarter. I believe the biggest lead for Toronto was 17, but then, especially when Dragic was in the game, really pushed the tempo and was able to get Miami back into it. Toronto's next game is Wednesday against Orlando, and Miami plays Tuesday on a back-to-back against Boston. Second game of the day was a fun one. Denver 121, Oklahoma City 113 in overtime. Denver didn't have Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, or Will Barton. Oklahoma City didn't have Terrence Ferguson, who was out injured, or Dennis Schroeder, who was out because he left the bubble for the birth of his child. The story of this game, 100%, was Michael Porter Jr. He had his best game as a pro, and it's really not even that close. 37 points, 12 rebounds. He was 12 of 16 from the field, 4 of 6 from deep, and 9 of 9 from the line. And this was as close as he got to looking like the guy that came out of high school as a surefire top 5 prospect when he decided to go to Mizzou, and then he started having the back problems and didn't play that well in the few games before he was shut down with a back injury. If he can be, not necessarily this good every single night, but a real consistent offensive contributor, whether he's starting or coming off the bench once Denver gets a little more healthy, that could be the type of guy that raises their ceiling a bit to where maybe on their best nights they can get up to that Clippers-Lakers level and possibly be at least the best of the rest in terms of opportunity to maybe get to the finals. Nikola Jokic, he was Nikola Jokic. 30 points, 12 boards, 10 dimes, 10 of 21 from the field, 0 of 5 from deep, but 10 of 11 from the line. Just doing what he does in terms of facilitating the offense, having Monte Morris take some of those responsibilities off of him certainly helped as well. But Jokic has been playing, he's never going to be a great defender, but he's at least been a solid defender, not necessarily a deterrent at the rim, but he's making guys make that one adjustment when they get to the rim. And a lot of times that can be the difference between the ball going in and it not going in. Paul Millsap and Monte Morris had 17 apiece for the Nuggets. On the OKC side, you could definitely tell they missed Dennis Schroeder especially, because a lot of the damage that OKC does is with those three-guard lineups when they have Chris Paul, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Dennis Schroeder on the court at the same time. And the second units really didn't have the offensive punch that they normally do, because Oklahoma City is a team that's built with a ton of defensive guys. So when one of their main offensive creators is out, it really stands out that much more than normal. SGA led them in scoring with 24. He was 6 of 13 from the field, 9 of 11 from the line. He was pretty aggressive trying to get into the lane. Chris Paul had 23, 8 of 17 with 2 of 6 from 3 and 5 of 6 from the line. And Gallo had 20. From watching this game, boy, if there's just one thing I could wish upon a player, it's that I would love for Lu Dort on Oklahoma City to be able to shoot at all. He was 3 of 13 in this game, but his defense is so good. He's built like a Mack truck. Like, he honestly looks more like a running back or a safety. Just a thicker built dude who also can kind of protect the rim. He had a couple instances of getting real good verticality while not falling and coming from the weak side to protect the rim. I mean, that's a guy that really is underrated and a good story. He came into this season on a two-way contract, but set the record for most games started by a guy on a two-way contract. Now, mind you, in the hiatus, I don't know what went on in these contract negotiations, but he got screwed on a long-term deal. 4 years, $5.4 million total, not per year. So he should have been able to get more than that. And those last 2 years are team options, if I remember correctly. So Lu Dort, get yourself a better agent, but man, do I want you to get a jump shot, because if he can do that, that's a real player in this league. It almost looks like his jump shot, just there's so much stuff going on, he just needs it rebuilt a little bit and simplified, because it's not that he's just missing, it's that a lot of his shots aren't even really that close, or they don't have a whole lot of touch on them. So that is my wish for Lu Dort, and really it's kind of a consistent theme for Sam Presti guys. He loves athletes that can't shoot. That's just kind of what he does, and that's kind of what's hurt them for a while. Another nice thing that I saw from Oklahoma City is just seeing Andre Roberson back on the court, being gone for almost 2.5 years, seeing him being able to contribute again when I know I probably wrote him off. So the fact that he's able to put in the work that he did to come back and start playing again and be relatively effective, good for him. Now, I mentioned this game went to overtime, and especially in the fourth quarter, it was pretty touch and go. But there was one spot that you figured this game was going to be done, because Chris Paul, of all people, he of the 90.1% from the free throw line this year, missed a free throw that would have given Oklahoma City a 1-point lead and more than likely the win, because there was only a second or two left for Denver after that, and I don't believe they had any timeouts. But Chris Paul went to the line with Oklahoma City down one, misses the first free throw, makes the second free throw to make it 109-109 and send this game to overtime. And if I can be selfish and a little salty here for a minute, I also had the under at 219.5, so that's not great when one of the best free throw shooters in the game misses a free throw to send it to overtime and screw your under. I know that's frustrating to OKC fans and me as well, but just give me that moment. But on the whole, Denver was pretty impressive, all things considered, not having their three top guards in this game. But man, like I said, Michael Porter Jr., if he can keep up some of that offense on a game-in, game-out basis, they're going to be a lot better off. But man, does he have to learn how to play defense, because yeah, he had like one nice block that he swatted out of bounds, but possession to possession, the dude is still a disaster defensively. So that's hopefully going to be coming in time, because you really cap what your ceiling can be as a player if you are just atrocious on defense. It's kind of what I'm thinking of the Trae Young effect right now. Denver's next game is Wednesday against San Antonio, and OKC plays Wednesday against the Lakers. Support for today's pod is brought to you by Manscaped, who's the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. Now, I've told you a lot over the past, month and change or so about the Lawnmower 3.0, but another part of the perfect package I want to focus on today is the Crop Preserver. So it's the ball deodorant. It's oil-free. I really love it because, hey, when it's one of those days where you just know it's going to be hot out, or you know you're going to be really active, which, you know, may not be as often for me, but I know for a lot of other people, you're very active on a daily basis. It's a great way to make sure you're feeling right down there throughout the day. So to get the Crop Preserver, obviously the Lawnmower 3.0, and the rest of the perfect package, use promo code CAMP, C-A-M-P, at manscaped.com, and you can get 20% off and free shipping. What I like about it is the Crop Preserver is oil-free, so you don't get any of that sort of feeling. You can just put on some of the deodorant in that area, and you're set. You don't have to think about it the rest of the day. And when you pair it with the Crop Revival, which is the spray toner that if you don't have a whole lot of time and you just stop back at home and you maybe want to just kind of freshen up a little bit before you go back out after work, one or two sprays of the Crop Revival and you're right back to where you were in the morning. So it's not just the Lawnmower 3.0, which is a fantastic way to take care of all your grooming downstairs. The Perfect Package also has that Crop Preserver, the Crop Revival, the Crop Cleanser, which is a moisturizing hair and body wash, the anti-chafing boxers, which are pretty self-explanatory, and the Shed, which is the travel and storage bag. So if you want all of that, you can get 20% off and free shipping if you use promo code CAMP, C-A-M-P. So get yourself a perfect package. Get yourself that Lawnmower 3.0. Make that aspect of your life worry-free by going to manscaped.com. Use promo code CAMP, C-A-M-P, and get 20% off and free shipping. Game 3 on the slate was Indiana 111, Washington 100. There's not a whole lot to write home about from this game. TJ Warren was still allowed to do TJ Warren things. Victor Oladipo didn't play for Indiana. So TJ Warren led the Pacers and led all scorers with 34. He was 14 of 26 from the field, had 11 boards as well. Malcolm Brogdon played. He had 20 points, but only 6 of 18 from the field, had 7 boards and 6 assists. Miles Turner and Aaron Holiday each contributed with 17. The Pacers were only 7 of 26 from the three-point line, so that's 27%. They need to improve that if they want to prove literally everybody wrong and try and win a first-round series once we actually get to the Eastern Conference playoffs. Washington's really bad. I know I'm not breaking any news to anybody, but my God, do they suck. I get they don't have like their top three players at least. The only guys that are even interesting to note, Thomas Bryant, who actually starts for Washington when their normal team is there, 20 points and 11 boards, and Rui Hachimura, their first round pick from this year, 9 points, 7 boards, 6 assists, 4-12 from the field. Why is Washington in the bubble? Whatever. All right, Indiana plays on a back-to-back Tuesday against Orlando, and Washington plays Philly on Wednesday. A battle of the top rookies had New Orleans beating Memphis 109-99. This felt pretty much like a must-win for both of these teams because New Orleans is battling to get up to that ninth spot. At the end, I'll go over some standings and news and notes and that kind of stuff, so we'll get a full picture of where these teams are at. It was the most minutes Zion played. He played 25 minutes and played down the stretch and was pretty effective. 23 points, 7 boards, 5 assists, only 9 of 21 from the field, but 5 of 10 from the line. He tried a 3, and it looked halfway decent. It went right off the heel of the rim, so it was just a little strong, but right on line. Brandon Ingram was exactly what the Pelicans need Brandon Ingram to be when Zion's playing a full complement of minutes. 24 points, 7 boards, 5 assists, 8 of 16 from the field. It was just every time the Pelicans needed a bucket, Brandon Ingram was there to get them an easy bucket. Since Zion's working his way back, and he's still learning the game too. Like, that's the other thing we have to remember. Before this, he played, what, 19 games? So he's still learning how to maneuver on the NBA court. I mean, he's still really damn good while figuring that out, and it just shows how great his potential can be. But having a guy like Brandon Ingram that you can just toss the ball to and say, hey, just get us a bucket, is really key. And I mentioned it before that I love how aggressive he's being. It's not just, okay, can I get myself a three or a solid mid-ranger? There are times where he sees a lane and he is planting that foot and getting downhill, getting the basket, which is really a change for Ingram because he seemed pretty content more often than not in his career to either be shooting from three or some deep twos. Now, he's pretty good at shooting those deep twos, but the fact that he's being as aggressive as he is really helps out New Orleans, who, especially moving forward, as you look at the rest of the schedule, it's pretty cake for them compared to other teams. So for as much as we were all writing off New Orleans, and I still am very wary of thinking they're going to win that eighth playoff spot, you can't write them off completely as of yet just because that battle for the eighth seed is so jumbled right now. It was pretty balanced scoring for New Orleans. Jrue Holiday, Josh Hart, and J.J. Redick were all in double figures. And defensively, which has been the big issue of the last few games, Derek Favors was a lot better. Jrue Holiday is just so good, and it was nice to see him do his work on the perimeter and then have people on the back line be able to compliment him and finish off a good defensive possession here and there. But the other thing is Memphis just, it was a taffy pull offensively. Only 40% from the field as a team, 28% from three. I mean, Jaren Jackson Jr. is really fun. He had 22, 7 of 17 from the field, only 2 of 8 from deep. He's so intriguing because he can shoot the ball. He can shoot threes and not just regular threes. He can take that step or two back. Maybe not quite 30 footers, but he's out there in that 26, 27 foot range and making some of those shots. He's athletic as hell and is getting better at the other aspect, the nuanced aspects of the offensive game. He does still need to work on the defense a good amount. He's so athletic that he should be a true difference maker defensively, and he's just not there yet. We do have to remember that Memphis is the second youngest team in the league, so it's going to take some time for them, and that's okay. I mean, really, if we go back to preseason predictions, a lot of people, including myself, had Memphis as the worst team in the West. So while they're still not looking good here in the bubble, and especially Ja Morant, who should be unanimous Rookie of the Year, they're still a team with a really, really bright future, regardless of what happens here. I mentioned Ja Morant struggled. 5 of 21 from the field, only 11 points, but he had 8 assists and 5 rebounds. And in the first half, we had a Grayson Allen sighting, and not for hurting someone else or any sort of cheap shot. He had 17 points in the first half, 5 of 6 from 3. He was 6 of 10 overall, was shut out in the second half completely. So at the end of this episode, I'll get to the standings and how this game affected everything. But it was a huge step up for New Orleans, and Memphis kind of continues to come back to the pack. New Orleans gets a couple days off. They don't play till Thursday against Sacramento. Memphis plays Wednesday against Utah. Philly escaped with a 132-130 victory over San Antonio. This game was just kind of surprising most of the way. It was fairly close, but you came into this game figuring, all right, San Antonio, they haven't played good opponents as of yet, and not many people thought they'd be really even in contention for that 9 seed to cause a play-in tournament. But here we are with San Antonio challenging at least one of the what should be better teams in the East. Definitely the most frustrating team in the East, and I'll get to that in a minute. Joel Embiid led Philly with 27 points, 9 of 17 from the field, 9 of 12 from the line, 9 rebounds and 5 assists. Tobias Harris had another solid game, 25 points, 10 of 17 from the field. Josh Richardson had 19. And hey, Shake Milton, for as bad as that last game was and Joel Embiid yelling at him on the court, 16 points, 6 of 9 from the field, 5 boards, 3 dimes, and hit the game-winning 3 at the end. All right, so here was the situation. 10 seconds left, down two. In the front court, Philly has the ball. Shake Milton inbounds it to Al Horford, who came around to the top of the key. DeJounte Murray was supposed to be guarding Shake Milton, but I guess he was told for the inbounds to just focus on guys that could be coming back to the ball. So his back is to Shake Milton, who's inbounding the ball. Milton inbounds it to Al Horford, and Milton just takes really two casual steps inbounds, and there's nobody within at least 10 feet of him. So Al Horford just gives him the ball back, and from that wing, Shake takes the three and drains it. And DeJounte Murray literally had not even turned around as of yet. So I imagine Coach Popovich just said, hey, if Shake Milton's going to beat us, so be it. And in that instance, he did, with Philly down one going into that possession. Now on the way back down, Jakob Poeltl had a chance to tie it. Tobias Harris actually making a nice defensive play, and Philly escapes with that win. It's just so frustrating. Offensively, you get it. And there's only so much Brett Brown can do, because that's the roster that's given to him in terms of the lack of shooters, guys that like to be in the same spaces on the floor. I think Shake Milton in the starting lineup and Al Horford coming off the bench, but still playing a lot, has worked well. But defensively, there's just no reason for Philly to be as average as they've been at times, or even bad. This personnel wasn't put together because of offense. It was put together to not just be a good defense, but be the best defense in the league and be so overwhelming that their offensive inefficiencies could get glossed over a little bit because they just wouldn't be giving up any points. I mean, Joel Embiid maybe has more individual impact on defense than anybody in the league when he's at his best. You could say Rudy Gobert does it more consistently. There's no doubting that, but Embiid is a 100% stone cold rim protector. I mean, Ben Simmons is an all-NBA level defender. Josh Richardson has been an all-NBA defense consideration before. Shake Milton is a real solid defender out there. That's probably what he does best at this point. Al Horford has been a really good defender in his career, and especially in a possible series against the Bucks, he could get some time against Giannis. And if Tobias Harris is the worst defender on your starting unit, you're doing pretty well, because I wouldn't say he's great. He's fine defensively. And especially he's considered good if he's your fifth defender on your starting unit. There's just no reason for Philly to be doing what they're doing right now. So unless they get maybe even the conference finals, I expect Brett Brown to be gone as the head coach, fair or not, probably fair considering the amount of time he's had. And I really wouldn't be shocked at all if Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid is traded. I'd think at this point it's more likely that it'd be Ben Simmons that'd be moved. He's not having quite as much impact offensively, not being on the ball anymore. So I think moving him for a guard that can shoot and ball handle at least a little bit could go a long way to helping smooth out the offensive issues that Philly has had. Now for San Antonio, their old heads are lifting them. DeMar DeRozan's been really good. He had 30 points today, 11 to 20 from the field, 7 to 7 from the line. Rudy Gay had 24 points. He was 9 to 15 from the field. And I'm just intrigued by the three guards that they have. Having DeJounte Murray, having Derek White, and having Lonnie Walker, who's a guy that I've always liked and wish he got a little bit more run in San Antonio. You know, as much as San Antonio may not have the star young guys, I think they're developing some intriguing young role players. Murray has been really good defensively overall. Derek White's taken a step back this year, but he's a guy that can hit a shot for you and also defend admirably. Lonnie Walker's maybe your more boom-bust guy that's a little more streaky offensive guy. And Keldon Johnson has been pretty good for them on the outside. So I actually like a little bit of what San Antonio has moving forward. They just still need the dudes for their next team. And I'll be damned if, you know, this goes down as a loss, but it was a good-looking loss, if there is such a thing, in just trying to figure out how real this version of San Antonio is, where they're starting DeRozan at the four, and essentially trying to play up a little bit in terms of speed and just let it loose a little bit. So I can't believe I'm saying this, because I definitely wouldn't have said it at the beginning of the bubble. I'm intrigued to watch San Antonio in the rest of these seeding games and see where they end up, because I wouldn't be heartbroken to see them in that 8-9 matchup. Maybe not my first choice, but I wouldn't dread it as much as I probably was thinking about at the beginning of the bubble. San Antonio plays Denver on Wednesday, and Philly, they're off to Wednesday as well. That's when they get a day off against Washington. Final game of the night, Lakers 116, Jazz 108. Anthony Davis came back and dominated. 42 points, 12 boards, 4 assists, 3 steals. He was aggressive from the start. 13 to 28 from the field, 4 of 8 from deep, and 12 of 15 from the line. And as good as those numbers are offensively, he was just as good defensively. The Lakers as a whole just defended the hell out of the Jazz in this game. Really rare for Utah to get many open spots for a clear shot or a driving lane or anything of the sort. They were really, really good. LeBron had 22 points, 9 assists, and 8 boards. And the Lakers did lock up the number one seed. I do want to mention Dwight Howard was really good defensively at the rim as well. And Kyle Kuzma is not a great defender, probably not even that good of a defender, but his effort has gotten a whole lot better since getting down to Orlando. I always think of Kyle Korver for this. He's just a guy that makes you work to get around him now, where there are still plenty of guys where you don't even really have to work. It's just as long as you drive, you're going to get by them. Kyle Korver's not a good defender, but he at least makes you do the work to get around him, maybe give his own guys an extra second to come and help basically bail him out. That's all Kyle Kuzma has to do with some of the units he's on, and he's at least doing that right now, and it does make a difference. Even Dion Waiters putting forth some effort defensively, and he's still a guy that, you know, while he may not have the best lines here or there, gives the Lakers something that they need, and it's some creation outside of LeBron and AD. Even though it was another loss, I actually thought this was the best game that Utah played. Donovan Mitchell had 33 points, 5 boards, 4 assists, 9 of 22 from the field, 4 of 10 from deep, and 11 of 12 from the line. Mike Conley had 24 and 8 dimes. He was 5 of 5 from the line and 3 of 9 from deep. And Rudy Gobert had 16 points, 13 boards. He had his hands full trying to slow AD down. He actually did okay at times, but Anthony Davis is just so athletic that even with the length Gobert has, he can't keep up speed-wise or agility-wise with Anthony Davis. Now, there were too many turnovers for Utah. They had 21, and it was a minus 7 in terms of turnovers in the game. But I felt offensively they had their crispest sets. They got Gobert some easy lobs. There were some shots they were able to get. Some of them just didn't go down in this game. But I was really encouraged by how the Utah offense looked. And defensively, I didn't think they played that bad. I mean, considering how well I thought the Lakers played, to still have this be a close game is a good sign for Utah. And it was really close, with Utah even leading a good amount of the way until at the second half of the third quarter, the Lakers went on a 19-2 run where Anthony Davis just went off. He was getting in the passing lanes. He was hitting shots from deep. So the Lakers lock up the one seed. They're good for a while. And what's going to be interesting is see how many of these games left they actually push and play normal versus are they going to ramp down some minutes for LeBron and AD and some of the older guys leading into the first round of the playoffs? Or is the ramping down going to happen now and then they ramp them back up right in time for the first round? I think that's going to be interesting to see how Frank Vogel handles that, and it'll be something we'll be keeping an eye on moving forward with the rest of these seeding games. The Lakers play Wednesday against Oklahoma City. Utah plays on Wednesday against Memphis. I want to take a minute and talk to you about our friends over at Dr. Squatch. Now, you've heard me talk about all their soaps, and they have, 11 different varieties. I'm using the Cool Fresh Aloe at the moment. I've got the Eucalyptus Greek Yogurt on deck for when the Cool Fresh Aloe runs out. By the way, get yourself a soap saver. Make sure that each bar you get lasts even longer. And for that and all Dr. Squatch products, you can use promo code CAMP, C-A-M-P, at drsquatch.com. to get yourself a discount and to also help out this podcast. Now, the big thing today, Dr. Squatch just released toothpaste They have two toothpastes. There's the Rise and Shine with citrus mint. That's for the morning, so it can get that dragon breath away, keep you fresh throughout the day. It's got a little bit of peppermint in there, green tea and vitamin B12, and some tea tree oil that helps the toothpaste's effectiveness lasts throughout the day. And they also have the whiten and unwind with soothing spearmint, so that night toothpaste can just, you know, brush away everything that the day brings, and it helps whiten your teeth overnight. It's got this natural clay that whitens and fights stains throughout the day. Chamomile and valerian helps you, you know, unwind a little bit after a tough day and helps you sleep. And that eucalyptus oil helps protect your teeth all night long. They have the soap, they have the beard oil, which I have, the cologne, which I have, the hair products that I know Jay Zawoski, my partner on the I'm Fat podcast, loves. So do yourself a favor, go to drsquatch.com, take the Squatch quiz to find out what scents are best for you, and load up on some Dr. Squatch products with promo code CAMP, C-A-M-P. You'll get yourself a discount and you'll help out this podcast greatly. So go to drsquatch.com. In news around the league, the 30 coaches voted on who they think should win Coach of the Year, and it was actually a tie between Milwaukee's Mike Budenholzer and Oklahoma City's Billy Donovan. What's interesting is that it's two guys that are there for almost opposite reasons. Milwaukee has just been so incredibly dominant for a second year in a row that you just can't help but give it to Mike Budenholzer. And Billy Donovan is the stereotypical guy you think of for a Coach of the Year, where his team wasn't projected to do a whole lot, but ended up being really, really good. Currently sitting at the sixth seed in the West, considering I don't know a lot of people that thought Oklahoma City was going to be making the playoffs, maybe scraping in at the eighth seed, but to be as good as they've been, they've actually got the best record since, I want to say, Christmas, which is a hell of a feat for them. Nick Nurse was one vote away from making it a three-way tie, and honestly, he would be my pick, considering everything Toronto's done while losing Kawhi Leonard. But there's so many good coaches and good coaching jobs done out there that I'm not really going to argue with Budenholzer or Donovan. All right, let's take a look at the standings, as we're going to do every day here that we do one of these bubble wrap podcasts. In the East, Milwaukee's got that 5.5 game lead over Toronto. Toronto is 4 games clear of Boston, and Boston is 2.5 games clear of Miami. Miami's in the 4th seed in the East. They've got a 1 game lead on Indiana, 2 games clear of Philadelphia, who's at the 6th. Philly is 8 games clear of Orlando, so that's where your drop-off happens. Then Orlando and Brooklyn. Brooklyn's hanging tough, if we want to call it that for now. Only a half game behind Orlando for the 7th seed. And Washington, thankfully, is not going to be forcing a play-in game, because they are 7.5 games behind Brooklyn at this moment. In the West, like we mentioned, the Lakers clinch the 1 seed. The Clippers have a 1.5 game lead over the Nuggets for the 2 seed. Houston is the 4 right now. They are a game and a half behind Denver. Utah is at the 5. They're half game behind Houston. Oklahoma City is at the 6. They're a half game behind Utah. And then 2.5 games behind Oklahoma City is the current 7 seed, the Dallas Mavericks. And then that's where your big cutoff happens, because Memphis is still currently the 8. They're 7.5 games behind Dallas. So here is your play-in scenario at the moment. If it started today, it would be Memphis and Portland. Now, Portland and San Antonio are the same amount of games behind Memphis, but because Portland played 2 more games, they are 0.002 ahead of San Antonio in terms of winning percentage. This is just one of those things that's not going to be totally fair, but it's just a pure circumstance of the schedule before the season got shut down. So San Antonio knows they have to finish with a better record than Portland. They can't have the same, or they can't be the same amount of games back. New Orleans is a half game behind those two. Sacramento is a half game behind New Orleans. And Phoenix is a half game behind Sacramento. So from Portland, all the teams in the race for the 9 seed are within a game and a half of each other right now. And if you look at the morass in the 3 through 6 in the West, 3 is only 2.5 games
ahead of the sixth seed with basically everybody a game or a half game behind each other. So there's still a lot of jockeying to do. One thing I'm pretty sure about is Utah does not want to face Houston again in the playoffs. And I honestly don't want to see that series either, because we know how that one's going to go. And spoiler alert, it's not very good for the Utah Jazz. There are six games on your NBA slate today. First up is going to be Brooklyn against Milwaukee. Okay. Dallas and Sacramento is the next up. Then you have the Suns and the Clippers, Magic and Pacers, Celtics Heat, and Rockets Blazers is your nightcap. All right, that's today's recap pod. Thank you for tuning in. As always, shoot any questions over to basketballcamppod@gmail.com, at Rick C. Camp on Twitter. Subscribe, rate, and review the podcast, and check out our sponsors that we had earlier, Dr. Squatch and Manscaped. I am Rick Camp, and this is Basketball Camp.